I've written a column in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled Confessions of a Well-Intentioned Preacher. It details how I mistakenly ignored or explained away entire parts of Scripture in order to protect my hearers from legalism. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Lyman Stone writes about the certainty he found in the presence of Christ in his word and sacraments. The free online Issues Etc. journal. Everyone agrees that the Masterpiece Cake Shop versus the Colorado Commission on Civil Rights Supreme Court case was about religious liberty. It was about religion in the public square, wasn't it? But was Christianity the religion of Jack Phillips that, to his conscience, said he could not craft a wedding cake, especially for a gay wedding? Was that the only religious position at play or at work in the court's consideration? They may not have called it a religious position, but was it the only one, Christianity? Was there perhaps another religious position, that of secular progressivism? Joining us to talk about that on this Friday afternoon, June the 15th, Dr. Russell Dawn. He's Associate Professor of History and Political Thought at Concordia University, Irvine, and he's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled The Masterpiece Cake Shop Case Proves America's State Religion is Leftism. Dr. Dawn, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much.
Why do you think most people don't recognize progressivism as a religion?
That's a good question, Todd. I think part of the answer is that progressivism has kind of snuck into American institutions unawares. You know, a lot of people have not been aware of what this thing is that has been taking over in government and in the classroom. And that's less true today than it was, say, 10, 20 years ago. People are becoming more aware now, but it was very sneaky for a long time. The other reason, and this might be the main reason, is that progressivism does not state a belief in God. There is no God or group of gods in progressivism. It's a non-theistic or secular religion. And so in our American tradition, we think of religion in at least loosely Christian terms, and so that includes a God. So to think of a secular worldview as a religion is a little bit foreign to our way of thinking.
You say it's not only religion, it is America's established religion. How do you mean that? Make the case for that.
Okay. I mean it informally, first of all. It is. There's nothing official about it, or at least there's very little official about it. Mostly it is that it has taken over the culture gradually but very surely. So we see it all over the place nowadays. The LGBTQ plus movement or movements, the Black Lives Matter movement, and Antifa, third wave feminism, the white privilege police, these are all manifestations of progressivism. And it really dominates from the federal level, it dominates the thinking of the individuals who are in power in the federal government, in many state governments, in Hollywood, the media, our school systems, our college placement board, the college board, writers of our textbooks, our high school textbooks. There are progressives. Oh, and in major corporations like Google and Amazon are run by progressives. And so it's everywhere, and that influence is everywhere, and it is in our lives every single day. You can't go to the movie theater without encountering progressivism. You can't watch network news or read an online journal, at least a mainstream one, without encountering progressivism. It is even part of, as the Masterpiece Cake Shop case shows, it's part of how we decide what is and is not constitutional. Now, it's only one part, I'd call it a small but very significant part of how we interpret the Constitution. And so without ever getting official status, without Congress ever passing a law, progressivism has just become the way we think. It is the filter through which America views the world and views itself and views humanity. And so with all of that, it has become established as our religion. Even non-progressives are not free from its influence.
What do you mean by that?
Well, that was a kind of a weird way of saying it. Christians all over the country are inundated with progressivist thought, and they aren't necessarily aware of the extent to which they have adopted the views of progressivism. So, for instance, homosexual marriage is now, if the things I've read are accurate, accepted by more than 50% of the country, and that means it's accepted as permissible, as just as much a marriage as heterosexual marriage, by many Christians. And some of those are evangelicals, are traditional Christians. The problem is they haven't read the books, read the articles, read the critical approaches to this, to see the fallacy of this, to see how it does not fit with Christianity, and that it's not a more compassionate viewpoint. What they see is the equals sign and love wins and all of these very compassion-based symbols that don't actually tell the accurate story. What they tell is the progressivist view of the story. So we take that on board, many Christians take that on board, without realizing that what they're doing is antithetical, what they're believing is actually antithetical to their core beliefs in Christianity.
You say that progressivism is a religion in many of the same ways that Marxism was a religion. You kind of make the case that Marxism was a religion, that progressivism is simply evolved Marxism. Walk us through that.
Yes, that's, if I may be candid, that's one of my, I think the weakest point in the essay is my making of that link. I'm a little bit sloppy with that. So this will be a good opportunity to correct that at least somewhat. Marxism is clearly a religious worldview. It parallels Christianity. And I won't, since your question isn't specifically about that, I won't go into all the details of that. But then comes progressivism. Now, progressivism starts in the 19th century, and that's what gives us the worldview of, say, Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson, to name a couple of major figures of that. But that, if you look at the worldview of Teddy Roosevelt, you're not going to see modern progressivism. It's not going to seem very Marxist. And that's because this is an evolving worldview. And so the early forms of it, in sort of the Roosevelt, the Teddy Roosevelt sense, are not very solidified as very Marxist views. By the time we get to the 1930s and Franklin Roosevelt, what we have evolving within Marxism is cultural Marxism. So there was an Italian writer by the name of Antonio Gramsci. He was a communist thinker, and in fact he was jailed by the Italian fascists for his views, and he sets forth kind of a cultural Marxism, and that's really where modern progressivism starts to take off, and he influences a lot of Western thinkers that way. And this cultural Marxism, instead of focusing specifically on economics, it's focusing on basically revolution in all aspects of life until all people are utterly equal in all of their outcomes. And as I said, that becomes very influential on American, but also the other European thinkers. And so that kind of thinking, that kind of cultural Marxism, then connects with almost, you could almost describe it as a post-millennialist Christianity, but this is not traditional Christianity really. It's a pretty secularized version of it, but kind of this goal of a perfection, you know, almost a holy goal of perfection here on earth. And so it gets even more loaded with religious terms through the, you know, 1940s, 50s, and 60s, that era. And so it is this progressivism that has taken over very broadly in the American mainstream.
We're talking about the civil religion of progressivism with Dr. Russell Dawn when we come back, how it bears upon the decision and the decision-making in Masterpiece Cake Shop, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission.
Whether you're a man yourself or a woman who cares about the men in your life, you won't want to miss the June issue of The Lutheran Witness. Join John Kleinig, Hans Feeney, Jeffrey Hemmer, Bror Erickson, and others in this power-packed issue on men at church as they explore toxic masculinity, godly fatherhood, the religious gender gap, and more. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Athanasius, Bishop of Alexandria in the 4th century, was known for boldly confessing Jesus Christ as both true God and true man. This is what we do at St. Athanasius Lutheran Church in Vienna, Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C., continuing this historic confession of our Savior who died for us and now comes to us in word and sacrament. If you live in the D.C. area or just visiting, come join us. For more information, find us on the web, St. Athanasius Lutheran Church.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
I will make you birthday cakes, cookies, brownies. I'll, sell you anything else in the shop. I just don't do cakes for same-sex weddings. At which point, both of them stood up, swore at me, flipped me off, stormed out of my shop.
Do we need all the things that we think we have to spend money on? Do we need to make as much money as we think we need?
Someone will say, well, let's talk about assisted suicide. Suddenly, all elderly people are treated beautifully by their families. All doctors have this kind, loving relationships with people who all have access to the best health care there is, and they still want assisted suicide.
Christianity absolutely can be falsified. If the resurrection didn't occur, if that body is in the ground, Paul says we should all be hedonists.
That's just a taste of the four sound bites we have ready to play for you in the last half hour of Issues, Etc. We'll play them for you, and then you'll give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or go to our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll vote for Issues, Etc. soundbite of the week. In the meantime, we're talking about the civil religion of progressivism. Dr. Russell Dawn is our guest, Associate Professor of History and Political Thought at Concordia University, Irvine. Dr. Dawn, let's turn this to the Masterpiece Cake Shop case recently in the Supreme Court. You say that it's not only an example of the kind of unacknowledged presuppositions that are at work in progressivism as a civil religion, but you say this case was unwittingly trying to set boundaries for the religion of progressivism. What do you mean by that?
Yes. Well, there can be very intolerant established religions. So, for instance, the Taliban is the established religion of Afghanistan, and it's extremely intolerant. It is highly difficult to be a Christian in any public sense in Afghanistan. And then at the opposite end of the spectrum, the Church of Sweden and the Church of England are established churches. They are established religions in Sweden and England, respectively. But they're extremely tolerant of other worldviews, of non-Christian beliefs, to the point to where it's not even clear that they're as tolerant of traditional Christian views as they are of non-Christian views. And so there's this spectrum of tolerance within established religions. So the question for progressivism in America is, how tolerant is it going to be? And so we have Justice Elena Kagan and Justice Neil Gorsuch penning separate concurrences, one of whom is setting a less tolerant, Justice Kagan sets up sort of a less tolerant progressivism, and Justice Gorsuch is arguing, in effect, for a more tolerant progressivism. Now, one thing to be clear about this, they are not making these arguments explicitly. They are not saying, this is our established religion, and here's how tolerant it is or is not going to be. These are, as you point out unacknowledged presuppositions, and I actually don't even think it's a presupposition for Justice Gorsuch, but it's not acknowledged that progressivism is our established religion. And so when they're arguing how influential progressivism is to be in America and is to be on the court, how much is the court bound by progressivist beliefs, that is in effect what they're arguing, even if it's not explicitly what they're arguing, the question of how tolerant is this religion going to be.
So in effect, whether they are dissenting or whether they are the concurrence of the majority in the Masterpiece Cake Shop, they're all, to one degree or another, and to one degree of understanding of those presuppositions, they're all dealing with the same issue. How tolerant will America be of a competing religious worldview, one that competes with progressivism?
Yes. As Christians, we are now in the position of being religious dissenters. I think that's part of why the culture wars have been so vitriolic and for decades. You know, in the 1980s and early 90s, Christian Americans suddenly found themselves losing influence, suddenly found Christianity losing influence in the public square, and fought back, saying, in effect, this isn't who we are as Americans. The problem is that fight started too late. It in many ways, we already did have progressivism established, at least to some extent, not as much so as today, but it was already very much in our schools and media conglomerates and that sort of thing. So yes, we're dealing with the court. Each member of the court, with the possible exception of Justice Thomas, is dealing with this question of what do we do with these religious dissenters, in this case, a Christian.
What can we learn from, say, the dissenting opinion of Elena Kagan with respect to what marriage is according to the religion that is progressivism?
Yes, her concurring opinion says, well, it comes down to what is a wedding cake. Justice Gorsuch, in his concurrence, says that a cake baked for a homosexual marriage is not necessarily the same thing as a wedding cake. And in a footnote, Justice Kagan calls him out on that and says there's no such thing as a cake baked for a gay wedding. There is only a wedding cake, and that's what these two individuals ordered, was a wedding cake. Well, that really begs the question of what is a wedding or what is a marriage? Does marriage have a nature? Is it defined by the people getting married? Or does it have a nature in itself, and the people getting married are either adhering to that nature or not? As Christians, we believe firmly that marriage has a nature, that God designed it as the permanent union of a man and woman, and not as something designed for people's emotional fulfillment. It does provide emotional fulfillment, but that's not exactly the point. It's this permanent union for mutual support and the rearing of children, bringing into existence and raising the next generation, be fruitful and multiply. That's what marriage is in its nature. And Justice Gorsuch is recognizing that that is the view of Mr. Phillips, the baker at the Masterpiece Cake Shop. Justice Kagan is saying, no, there is no difference. It is between a marriage between a man and a woman and a marriage of two men or two women. It is in the eyes of those getting married to define what marriage is. And once they've defined it that way, this is a marriage, then under the progressivist worldview, the progressivist establishment, everyone else must fall in line. If your Christian beliefs don't fall in line with that, then the state can exercise its power. It has to exercise it fairly and neutrally, whatever that means. But it can exercise its power to bring you into line with this more, quote, inclusive view of marriage.
So where does this leave us? Because you point out that Masterpiece Cake Shop, as a decision which is about the extent to which progressivism as a religion will tolerate competing religious views, in this case, namely those of Christians, doesn't answer the question clearly about how tolerant progressivism is to be or will be in the future.
Right. There are a lot of people right now arguing over where this leaves us. Some initial responses said this is not helpful, this is not a victory for religious liberty. And then I think some more steady, sort of thoughtful voices came up within a day or two after that saying, actually, there's more good here than you might think if you read the history of Establishment Clause jurisprudence, of cases involving Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And so they see that there is some actual good here. And I'm actually more in that camp. I do think that this is somewhat of a victory for religious liberty. The problem is the Kagan concurrence and the Gorsuch concurrence are setting forth very different views of how tolerant that establishment is to be, but they both concurred in the outcome of the case. So yes, this is a 7-2 decision in favor of religious liberty, but in the interim, until another case comes up and either the Kagan view or the Gorsuch view or perhaps some other view ends up carrying the majority, until that time, states and counties and any other jurisdictions that deal with these issues can deal with them according to Kagan's concurrence, or they can choose to deal with them according to Gorsuch's concurrence. So they can be less tolerant as under Kagan's concurrence, or they could be more tolerant as under Gorsuch's concurrence. Both of those views are legitimate views right now because the case didn't decide which of those views should win.
How likely do you think it is that perhaps some more honest of those in academia or in legal circles or maybe even in the courts would acknowledge that what we're dealing with here is an established civil religion in the United States of progressivism and treat it accordingly?
That's a good question. I'm not very optimistic about that, to be honest. I think my voice is definitely a minority voice in this, and I don't think honesty, intellectual honesty, is what's really characterizing the academy or the halls of power in government, or really any other place of power these days. Hollywood is dishonest. So I don't see it, and there's no benefit to those who are progressivists to admitting this, that it's the established religion, because then they know it has to be dismantled as an established religion. So no, I don't foresee a lot of honesty coming out of this, and I have a feeling that if this issue does ever become a more broadly discussed possibility, if more and more people on the right start to say that yes, progressivism is an established religion, I think we'll actually see a really heavy backlash against that from the left, probably pretty vitriolic.
Dr. Russell Dunn is Associate Professor of History and Political Thought at Concordia University, Irvine. He's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled "The Masterpiece Cake Shop Case Proves America's State Religion is Leftism." You can read it at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Dunn, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
Speaking of religions, even unacknowledged religious truth claims, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June is Religion on Trial, Examining Religious Truth Claims by Issues Etc. regular guest Craig Parton. You can find out more about this book at our website, issuesetc.org. It's on every page of the website. Or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and order Religion on Trial, Examining Religious Truth Claims, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. In Hour 2 of Issues Etc., it's This Week in Pop American Christianity with Pastor Chris Roseborough. We'll talk what he's calling doctrinal transgenderism. Then we'll play Issues Etc., Soundbite of the Week.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.